Psalm 63, the psalmist thinks of God as he lies on his bed at night. And he rises in the morning to praise God in the temple. So he comes to the early morning mass here. It's lovely in this church. There's usually about 40 people. It's been up to 100 of a morning mass. I think, yeah, it's not bad. You know, I mean, it's whatever. And I say, would I be there if I wasn't a priest? And I think, be sure. It is a prayer of especially intimate trust, addressing God in the second person throughout. It's not talking about God, it's addressing God. Note the constant reference to the body, throat, hands, lips, flesh, seeing, tasting, touching, speaking. Once I alert you to this, you see it all, but you mightn't have seen it without. It's good to read the psalm in the light of God's incarnate word, Jesus. And the psalm begins, O God, you are my God. For you I arise at dawn. My whole being thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. For I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and your glory. Now, often through the Bible, the image of seeing is used in relation to God. Well, a good question to ask yourself, let's take the resurrection of Jesus too. Someone asked me this question years ago and it stayed with me. Would a physically blind disciple have missed anything at the resurrection? Once you ask the question, the answer is clearly no. So seeing, We're pretty practical people, we're pretty hands-on people, and you think, oh, they saw the risen Jesus. A blind disciple would have seen the risen Jesus too, not with his eyes. So it's a seeing, it's a word, we use it too. I say, do you see what I mean? Well, you could have your eyes closed and still see what I mean. Same in Hebrew, in Greek. Now, the word used in the New Testament, by the way, is horao, which is etymologically connected to our English word aware. They're the same root. They were aware of Jesus. They were aware of God's presence. Obviously, it's not a visual thing here, but we use the word in seeing the face of God. Well, that means being aware, intimately communing with God, who is revealing God's self to me in an experience. Eyes have got nothing to do with it. Well, they're not irrelevant. If you've got eyes, well, you'll see God also reflected in the beauty of a lovely autumn day such as today. But if you're blind, you'll be aware of God's presence in the hand of someone who loves you, who's touching your hand and bringing you a cup of tea at 10:30 in the morning or whatever. Verse 3. Because your kindness is worth more than life, my lips will sing your praise. I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands and call on your name. That's how they used to pray. And if you look in the catacombs, you see the position. You see they've got them in the catacombs of Rome. A number of them where the prayer is like that. That's just the Jewish way of praying. And Rome, of course, was a Jewish Christian community for the most part earlier on. So they kept doing what they did when they were Jews, of course. You don't change your culture by becoming a Christian. You just be in love with Jesus within your culture. And then your culture changes under the influence of grace. I'll lift up my hand. My whole being is satisfied as with rich food. I will praise you with joyful lips. So you can think of the Eucharist, can't you? The Last Supper, all of that come flooding into your mind. Go back to the Old Testament, Isaiah 55, the last chapter in the Isaiah scroll that belongs to that anonymous prophet of the exile as before they return back to Jerusalem, Deutero-Isaiah sometimes called. He says, God says, why do you spend your money for that which is not bread? Good question for me, good question for you. And your labor for that which does not satisfy. Listen carefully to me. Shema. You could perfectly translate that, obey me carefully. Listen carefully to me. We had it earlier. Eat what is good. Delight yourselves with rich food. Now, Psalm verse 6, as I think of you, is personal, on my bed, meditating on you in the watches of the night. I haven't checked this word recently, but I suggest, and I'm pretty sure it's right. The word meditating usually means it's actually the one of the images of the cow, you know. Ruminating, is that the word in English? So meditating has something of that feeling of going over it and over it and over it and digesting it and bringing it up again and having another look at it and, you know, just chewing over it and there. Yeah. Because when they read, of course, this was the same, I suppose, in the history of the world, it's probably not, I don't know how long, but when Augustine, for example, read, he used his lips and he talks about it and that's the way people read. Our ability to read with keeping all our mouth and tongue quiet and just read, rapid reading is probably a fairly, probably came with printing, I don't know when. But when you see reading was done like by whispering the words. Same here. For you have been my help. Verse 7. And in the shade of your wings, we've had that a lot tonight, today, I sing for joy. I cling to you with all my longing. Your right hand holds me fast. And I've just got there some New Testament text before we conclude the psalm. 1 Corinthians 6:17. Anyone united to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. So the one breath. God breathes into our line, we breathe back. So it's a prayer communion, a breath thing. That covers all cultures, but it's a very mantra, you know. The prayer that's not, your head isn't going flat out, but your breath is in communion. Who will separate us from the love of Christ, says Paul in Romans 8. And lovely words of Jesus in Matthew 23. How often, he says, weeping over the city, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings. But it goes on, but you would not listen. You would not obey. You would not do the will of God, which is to live and live to the full. You preferred to live half your life because you were more protected by that. We're all a bit like this. You were afraid of freedom, so you stayed in a gilded cage and you died in the gilded cage. And they gave a reasonable eulogy, but in fact, you hadn't lived. This is kind of a bit hard, isn't it? I'm talking to myself, not to you. But, you know, that's the danger of our life, isn't it? And then we're in. The only purpose of religion, the only purpose of Christianity is to do what Jesus wanted. I want them to live and live to the full. So let's be gentle with ourselves and with others. But living to the full is the aim of life. And it's nothing to do with constricting anybody so that they'll be safe and not get lost, because you could spend your whole life in a cage and be perfectly safe and the snakes wouldn't get you, the owl won't get you, the cat won't get you, but you're actually meant to fly. So it's risky business, apparently. That's why I went to a seminary at the age of 16, to avoid all possible life. Only to find wonderful people, lovely education, good friends, and all the rest of the things I've been spoilt with for the rest of my life. But you can see the danger, can't you, of all of us going, being safe. And maybe it's reasonable, but it's not what we're on about. To conclude the psalm, verse 9, those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a prey for jackals. But the king will rejoice in God. All who swear by him will exult when the mouths of liars